You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
All right, let's get to this Ravens Steelers game. I saw some of the Steelers tweet out Eric Ebron is their tight end. This is BS, you know. And
I know Ebron from Detroit. Yeah.
Look, I understand in the moment. And by the way, it appears if they have more positive tests instead of playing this game, and if you missed the news yesterday, they move the game to Sunday at 1:15. So in the early window, there's supposed to be an NBC game. My guess is with more positive tests, this thing's going to be pushed back to week 18 or something. They got to find a way to slide this thing in because, otherwise I don't – the Ravens were already depleted anyway. I don't know if they'll have enough guys, but whatever. The idea that the NFL – or first of all, the NFL, by moving it, they screw NBC because NBC would have had a huge number on Thanksgiving night, right? They also do the same to Fox and to CBS because now NBC has a better game name-wise in that opening, in that early window, that rating will, suck some of the numbers from CBS and from Fox. So the idea that the NFL, there's like people are out to get the Steelers, like, dude, you guys are undefeated. You're having a great year. You just got to roll with it a little bit here.
That's what I don't get. I mean, everybody else, everything is fluid, Doug. We don't know, right? And I've been critical of the NFL. I remember there was a game, I think the Patriots played a game where there were some positive tests and they went along with the game. And I thought, well, why are they doing that when they've been postponing other games? But they went along with that game. And in this case, I give the NFL credit. This is not the game you want to move. Thanksgiving night, all the eyeballs, everything else going on. You don't want to stop that game if you didn't have to. I think the NFL's doing it right. All these people have tested positive. You can't go through with it. I understand from the Steelers' standpoint, this would have been, they played Thursday night, then they would have gotten 3 or 4 days off, until maybe come back on Monday. So they lose out on that, which I get, but it sounds awful, tone deaf, given the state of where we are in this country and this world during the pandemic. It's over a football game, dude. Yeah, I just can't get it.
Well, I mean, like, look, I this is one of the things about social media, which it can be, you can view it as a good thing, right? There's no filter of a PR. The bad thing is that, it's the old Herm Edwards, right? Just don't press send. Like,
right.
Dude, just take a breath and start to realize. I fully understand. I was listening to Jeff Schwartz, who was co-hosting Outkick the Coverage before when driving in. I fully understand the idea of, hey, you thought you're going to have a five-day weekend, and you're going to work Thanksgiving. Like, all right, we get it all adjusted. We'll have dinner tomorrow. We'll have dinner after the game with the kids or whatever. And then we have the weekend off, and they haven't had an off week. Like, I get it. Okay? But, again, it's just the idea of, let's take a breath, right? Inhale, exhale, realize all the other things. Realize, that's actually what Thanksgiving's supposed to be about, where you realize, like, okay, this might suck, but we still live in America. Got it. We're on an undefeated football team. We are relatively healthy.
Yes.
We might not even play this weekend. And, oh, yeah, by the way, like, whenever we play the Ravens, they're going to be depleted. And we're going to have a week. We're going to have be the only team with a week off heading into the playoffs because they've changed the bye thing with only one team having a bye. The idea of Thanksgiving is to stop, take a breath, and be thankful. And I think the Steelers missed that. But it's part of what social media provides, which is cutting out the filter and get how people really feel in that moment. And unfortunately, guys feel in that moment in kind of an immature fashion. I also think that we have this thing to where we want to think everybody's out to get us, right? It's like, it's one of the deals with the election where, like, we want to think that things are rigged and things are, and it's really not. It's really, really not. It's the scientists and doctors said, hey, man, Thanksgiving, there's going to be a second wave. It's going to be bad. Turns out there's a second wave. It's bad. We're all just trying to protect the sport so that we can get through and get to the playoffs and have a Super Bowl and maybe have people at the Super Bowl. And you're so caught up in yourself that you want to tweet about it. Like, I understand it, but I just think it's not the greatest look when you're the undefeated team and the other team is the team with all the positive tests.
And the other part, Doug, is, and I use this tone deaf from what's the reality for everybody else and what people are going through.
Right.
I get it. It's a football game. I get it. It's their livelihood. They make millions of dollars. I get all that. People are out here struggling with no jobs and family members who have passed. I mean, just do you look on Facebook? And I can't get over how many messages I've read, you know, from the people who are friends of mine, you know, on Facebook, whether I know them or not personally. But it's amazing.
Wait, how are they your friends if you know them or not?
Well, but you know, like you could ask to be
friendly. A Facebook friend.
Facebook friend. That's
okay.
What I mean.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So I see a lot of stuff, but I just can't get over how many people have been touched by it. Chris Broussard, my radio partner on The Odd Couple, lost his father-in-law, you know, this year to COVID. I mean, it's touched a lot of people, and it just seems insensitive. That's all. I get it, and they're just thinking about themselves at that time, Doug, the disappointment of that game and that moment, and then some days off. I do, but you need to pause, think about it. How is this going to look to the people who don't have jobs and who have lost loved ones?
Well, I would say, the pushback, this is the Dan Patrick Show, brought to you by Mercedes-AMG Driving Performance, Rob Parker, Doug Gottlieb, and for Dan the Danettes. I would say, like, if we had the legit discussion, it's one of the things that sports has provided, right? Like, if we do go into, like, in L.A. County, obviously, we're in some form of stay-at-home 10 o'clock order, and I don't really understand why you can't eat outside at a restaurant, but whatever. Let's just kind of get through it, people. But the it's fascinating to me. Sports do provide an escape. Like if we're stuck at home, it's so much better when there's sports on TV. And that was going to be a fun game. That was going to be a game of two teams that don't like each other. And as much as the Steelers record wise seemed dominant over the Ravens, last time was a 4-point game in which Lamar Jackson had the ball a chance to win it.
So the
other games suck.
Right. And the Steelers got 4 turnovers in that game to win by 4, if you remember that.
Yes,
right?
Yes. I actually think for people who are out of work. But yes, the lack of perspective, it's not the strongest look. Do I think Eric Ebron and Chase Claypool are bad people for being ticked? Like, nah, I think that's real and that's understandable. I just think that next time they could kind of pause a little bit and have a better feel for all that's going on. What's left is your Lions. What's left is the Texans, thankfully we'll get to that. What's left is the Washington football team against the Dallas Cowboys.
You couldn't pick two worst games for real for people to watch on Thanksgiving.
I almost think that's the genius to it.
I don't think so.
Are you going to watch?
Yeah, I'll watch. This is like
Tyson Roy Jones. There's no reason to watch Mike. What people forget, Mike Tyson has, we've created this kind of mythical lore of Mike Tyson. Because when he first came into the boxing world, everybody was scared to death. I mean, he came in with just that towel, right? And no socks, black shoes. And the fight was over before it started, right? But if you remember, Mike Tyson was a bad fighter at the end of the reason he bit Evander Holyfield's ear was he was frustrated because he was getting his ass kicked. Right? So he was bad.
I thought he was hungry.
Yeah, but Roy Jones was bad. Like, Roy Jones was... I actually played a professional basketball game against Roy Jones.
Did you in that... What was that?
USBL.
USBL,
yeah,
right.
He had 31 in a game. He took 31 shots, but he had 31.
Wow.
We can tell that story later. But these are two guys that were washed up 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and they're going to have a fight, which they're not going to score, but they're going to whatever. And people are going to buy. I guess the thing is that it's one of those in football. One, you could bet on it. Two, you got fantasy football. And three, it doesn't matter what the NFL puts on. We watch. We just do. People say, I don't watch the Pro Bowl. I don't want the Pro Bowl outrates NBA playoff games. They just watch. And so, yeah, that is it. These are not good games. But maybe that only proves the NFL's power and their point. Like, yeah, we can throw whatever on at Lions, Cowboys. You can watch. You can watch.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
All right, let's bring in Sean Merriman, of course. Lights out, great player, rookie of the year in the National Football League.
Cover a sports, tough guy.
Yeah, of course he's a tough guy. Sean, first of all, happy Thanksgiving. Second of all, what's your reaction to Bruce Arians openly criticizing Tom Brady?
Well, I just don't believe in that in general. And as much as I'm a Tom Brady hater for life, and I'm not afraid to admit that, I don't think you should be doing that, because that just creates turmoil in the locker room. I mean, we all got eyes. We can see what the problem is. We're seeing that Tom Brady hasn't completed a good pass past 30 yards down the field. We can all tell that, but we don't need the finger pointing in the locker room. I mean, Tom Brady has never been a guy. Again, as much as I like to bash and talk crap about Tom Brady has never been the guy that's called out anybody publicly, not a coach, not a player, not anybody on the staff. He's never done that. So I'll always give him credit for that. But also, too, you got to look at, you knew what you was getting when he got there. You knew what type of player Tom Brady was. And they got all these people who do the statistics and analyze and, you know, analytics and do everything like that in-house. And you saw that Tom Brady is not a great passer the last 5 to 7 years over 25 yards. You know that. So if you get down there and you don't have a system in place for a guy that's not accurate over, you know, 30 yards, why would you bring him in? So they created the problem. They had opportunities. I mean, they had opportunities to go get multiple players during the offseason and didn't. You know, you had an opportunity to go get Cam Newton. You had an opportunity to get I think Jameis was there, and I'm not saying that either one of these guys is better than Tom. I'm just saying that if you have a system where that requires you to throw the ball down the field and make big plays, go get that guy. Don't be mad at Tom because he's not accurate over 20 yards. You created that problem.
Sean, what also Tom Brady in that game where they lost to the Rams walked off the field, didn't shake Jared Goff's hand, and I get it. Tom has won a lot, 6 Super Bowls. A lot of people have crowned the guy. I just think it's classless because he's done it before. When he beat Jared Goff in the Super Bowl, of course he was there to shake his hand, but he walked out on Nick Foles during the Super Bowl when Nick Foles played an unbelievable game and won Super Bowl MVP. And earlier this year when Nick Foles beat him again, Tom Brady was a no-show, you know, to shake his hand. What do you make of that? And isn't that a bad look for a guy of his stature?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I got a theory, and I don't know him right, but I've been saying this. Now, I always thought that he had something against Nick Foles. I don't know what that something is or what Nick Foles said or did.
Yeah.
I thought he had something personally against Nick Foles. But I felt he also ran off into the locker room again to – make it not about Nick Foles, because that's what he talked about for this past year. Okay, so
let's just flesh this out here.
Yeah, okay,
Sean Merriman joining us, Rob Parker, Doug Gottlieb. We're all just for radio world out there. We all know each other and generally like each other. So like let's pretend this is like a little Zoom call. Sean, do you think he doesn't view Foles on his level? He's like, are you kidding me? This is the guy who wins the Super Bowl? Like, I know who Nick, like, and I mean, is that possibly it? I mean, what I'm trying to get into his mind of what he could have against Nick Foles, who's by all accounts seen as a really good dude. Like, I know Nick a little bit. He lives near me in the offseason. I played hoop with him. He seems like a guy that everybody likes. He's a very religious guy, but warm and friendly. Doesn't seem to be a phony.
Doug, he had an unbelievable Super Bowl game.
Right, he had an unbelievable Super Bowl. But like, do you think he's sitting there going, like, wait, we didn't play Malcolm Butler. This guy is not that good, and he has this unbelievable. He wins a Super Bowl, and if you remember that Super Bowl, the Patriots actually never punted in it. Brady turned it over to really end the game. He misread the defense and got hit. But they missed a field goal. They missed an extra point. Whatever. My only thing I can think of is maybe he thinks, here's a guy who won a Super Bowl against me and he's not on my level. Do you have any hypotheses as what it could possibly be?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. Because you got to understand that after Nick Foles won that game, I mean, people are talking about him like he was the best thing since sliced bread. right? I mean, we all put Nick Foles on a pedestal that he shouldn't have never been. He just played the perfect game. They ran perfect play calling. I mean, they caught these guys off guard and the Patriots on their heels the entire time. It was a perfectly called game. And after that game, everybody wanted to crown Nick Foles as some great quarterback, which he was nowhere close to being. Now, you know, Tom Brady, looking at it from his standpoint, I would be pissed too, but not pissed enough to go and just shake the man's hand. So when that happened, I just feel like it was something a little bit more personal, maybe something Nick Foles said or did. And like you said, I've seen him, you know, he's had great religious rants right after the game. I can tell what kind of guy he is. But, you know, there has to be something else there in order for him to do that, because it can't be because you just won one game against them. It has to be something more. And in my I just have this strange feeling that it was always about Nick Foles, always about Nick Foles. And now Tom Brady has to run off the field to someone else to take it, not about Nick Foles. I just don't believe that Tom Brady, with the spotlight on him and him knowing that the backlash he's going to get by not shaking another guy's hand, will continuously do it. So I just have to feel that he has to do something to mix it up.
And Sean, there's no way Tom, the people say, the minions who will support Tom Brady, oh, well, he's just frustrated, he didn't play well, and he's just mad. My point is, if they lose to the Kansas City Chiefs and Tom Brady doesn't play well, do you think he'll run off the field and not shake Patrick Mahomes' hand?
No.
No way.
No, not at all.
Wait.
Not at all.
Rob, you can't give me a no way, no how? I mean, it's like 6:30 in the
no
morning.
No way, no how on this Thanksgiving Day morning.
Well,
all right.
Well, I'm waiting for that.
Set up. Look, he's gone up to Drew Brees. He's gone up to other great quarterbacks. He's gone up to some guys who are not great quarterbacks. I just think that Tom has a certain level of respect for certain guys. And it's not anything you know, he's not like a sore loser. I just believe that he picks and chooses who he show respect to. And if that was anybody else other than Tom Brady, we would be slamming him all over the place. But, you know, his supporters and people who just love him to death will support him no matter what. But it's at the end of the day, it's not right.
You know, there's something I want to ask you about. Sean Merriman, our guest, Rob Parker, Doug Gottlieb, in for Dan and the Danettes. One of the things lost in that game is the Rams appear to be really good, right? And what the Rams did to the Buccaneers is kind of similar to what the Giants did to the Patriots in the Super Bowl both times, which is the ability to get to Tom Brady without blitzing, right? And by the way, this is what the Rams did to the Seahawks, is they could get to Russell Wilson without blitzing. And a lot of this comes down to Aaron Donald and his dominance, which attracts a double team and sometimes even more. Look, you were great at what you did, Sean. You came off the edge. You weren't the interior pass rusher, but you weren't able to sustain it for nearly as long because of injury. I'm just wondering, from a guy who's been down in those trenches, who does Aaron Donald compare to? Because he's unbelievably dominant at a position that we don't normally recognize as such.
You can't compare him to anybody because we haven't seen anything like this. And I've played with some great D tackles. You know, I played with a guy by the name of Jamal Williams, who's more of a big guy who took up two blockers in the 3-4 scheme. And then I went to Buffalo and played with Kyle Williams. And Kyle Williams, I mean, look, if Buffalo had a, you know, winning years and they had more TV games, we would put Kyle Williams up there as some of the greatest D tackles of all time. But he's not talked about enough because they didn't get to shine. So, and he's, you know, he's a Pro Bowl player, but he would have won multiple Pro Bowls if Buffalo had more visual and things like they had more TV games. We haven't seen anything like Aaron Donald before because this guy is doing this. People don't understand, being an outside linebacker to have, you know, double digit sacks every year, if you're really good, you know, that seems about right. You have doing what he's doing for the interior and knowing that you're coming into the game and he's going to get double and triple teamed. And the way he gets so creative to get skinny between that guard and that center, to turn his hips and explode through guys and play mind games and run stunts and go and hit an opposite guard on the other side that's not looking, just so you can blow another guy up and get there still. It's just he's gotten so creative and so dangerous that he like Lawrence Taylor did long time ago, and the way people blocked him and how he, you know, the reason why the short pass game and quick game was created was because of Lawrence Taylor. And what's happening, what we're seeing right now with Aaron Donald, they're about to change the game. They're going to start having to do something that they've never done in the history of football in order to block him.
Sean, today is, of course, Thanksgiving, and one of the traditions in the NFL is that the Detroit Lions play. Doug and I are going to talk about this later on in the show. But and this has been going on. The Lions first played a Thanksgiving Day game back in 1934, so it's longstanding. I covered 20 years of those games. But is it time for the Lions to be off and maybe somebody else? Should we end this tradition of the Lions being our Thanksgiving Day pregame, because pre-meal game that we've watched all these years?
They have to. You know, they have to. Look, I stopped watching the Lions of Thanksgiving when Barry Sanders retired, you know, like,
right.
You know, and I love watching Megatron and Matthew Stafford and things like that. They've been excited, but I just like, man, what did they sign, a 55-year deal? I just don't know and understand how the games aren't more competitive, because as we all know, people watch the games for stars, right? I mean, the NFL has kind of turned into the NBA as far as the stardom and being able to watch a Patrick Mahomes and being able to watch you know, big time quarterbacks and running backs and playmakers. I mean, that's what the NFL is now. So when that's the case, you have to have them on one of the most important parts of the year, and make it enjoyable for these, especially these tough times we're going through. We need to see some stars and some excitement. I just don't think that enough people are going to be sitting in front of the TV to watch the Lions.
Sean Merriman, join us. You got the Lights Out podcast. What's on the latest Lights Out podcast?
Yeah, we just had Tyron Woodley, man. As you guys
incredible.
Know, Rob, we talked about it.
Yeah,
you know, I'm heavy into the MMA. I got my Lights Out Extreme fighting my MMA league, which should be getting back up here as soon as our governor get his stuff together in California. So I had Tyron Woodley on. We just talked about his last fights, man, and him wanting to fight everybody he lost again. So I'm interested. I can't wait to see what's going to happen here when we get back up and going again.
Yeah. You going to buy Tyson and Roy Jones?
No way, no how. I know you're not going to buy that,
Hold
Sean.
On, please.
I am. Wow. I am because, you know, look, I always said this, right? I don't care how old Mike Tyson is. He always going to have one punch that's going to be able to knock you out, and that I'll pay for. So, you know, and then also, you know, I don't know if you guys are into it, but Jake Paul is also fighting Nate Robinson, I think, on that card. And I got a chance to train with Jake Paul, the DJ.
Okay, does he have any chance?
Jake Paul's going to probably knock Nate Robinson out somewhere in the late first, early second.
Really?
Nate
was known in NBA circles as a dude who you didn't want to mess with. Now, part of it is little guys have nothing to lose.
Exactly.
Right? Like, nothing to lose. But Nate was... Nate was the guy who could flip the switch on you, but you really think Jake Paul's really going to get him?
Yeah. After Jake Paul win, I mean, we've been pushing him to go pro. I think he should turn to be a pro boxer. He's that good. I think he has a shot. He has a former pro trainer, and I've watched him over this last 2 years in personal workouts and sparring matches against some of the pros. I think he should go pro after this fight.
Wow.
Sean if you could fight anybody in the media, who would you fight? No, I'm just kidding.
there's several.
I thought so. Okay.
We're having connection issues. We're having connection issues with Sean Merriman.
it would have been them talking crap with me when I was playing. I'm good with everybody now, but back when I was playing, I got a couple people I would love to lay out.
All right. Hey, Sean, happy Thanksgiving, man. Thanks for joining us.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
All right, Sean Merriman joining us.
That was fun.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
What up? Welcome in. Happy Thanksgiving. Doug Gottlieb, Rob Parker in for Dan and the Danettes. As Thanksgiving is supposed to be about food and family and fun. And honestly, the best sporting event today is probably the one on Fox. Kansas taking on Gonzaga in both teams' opening basketball
wow.
game. Because no, I'm saying, like, that's a great college basketball game with two teams that could win a national championship. Could have won it in the last year with some new pieces this year. And that's better than the NFL games. Because the big NFL game we were supposed to have was Ravens-Steelers. And that won't be played until Sunday, if it's played Sunday, because there's more positive tests coming out of the Ravens.
No doubt. And Doug, before we move and talk about football and Tom Brady, just curious.
Yeah.
You're married, have a family. Is your wife a good cook? Because everybody, you know, my late mom was an excellent cook. And I just remember, like, you know, all the good meals and cakes and pies and everything she used to make. Is your wife a good cook?
Yes! Oh, amazing! Unbelievable! That's Rob, that's the do I look fat in these pants question.
I'm just asking.
I actually have a daughter. My daughter, Grace, she's our culinary specialist. Like, she is so excited about today. Right? She said she
loves to cook and help out. How old is Grace?
She's 14.
Okay.
So I have twin 14-year-old daughters. And her sister actually... She has a couple things she likes to make. She loves mashed potatoes. She's going to make the mashed potatoes. Mm-hmm. But Grace is like, she's got the whole meal planned out. And she, you know, she watches YouTube and cooking shows and whatever. Like, we think, like, culinary may be her thing. But she's very, very excited. She makes mocktails and cocktails as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so Grace is more, and I love to cook.
I don't have any kids, but I'm sure as Doug, to see like one of your kids like latch on to something, like, you know what I mean? And you could see, like, you know, this might be her path. This, she might open up a restaurant.
Totally. Because right? Yes. Well, here's the thing. Okay. So Grace and I would say people think we look alike. She doesn't think so. She doesn't think so. She's got kind of sandy brown blonde hair with her curly hair, but we both have the same color eyes. There's parts of our features that look alike, but right. She doesn't like many of the things that she likes. She's not into sports at all. Right. She likes the Panthers because she has a cat. She loves all kinds of cats.
Okay.
Right. That's, but music, we can talk some music, although I'd have no sort of understanding. She plays instruments. She has a musical ear. But the thing that we do, like, we both love to cook. Okay. And I mean, love to cook. So I think the first thing is that it's something you can relate to with your kid. Like, we'll both stand around. Neither of us like to clean when we cook. So that's a problem. But we both love to cook and try each other's food. And, you know, there's certain spices that she likes that nobody else likes in our family. But she pushes the envelope. So I think that's the first cool thing. The second thing is the other part that you mentioned, which is, like, look, you kind of got to help them find their passion.
Yes.
And her twin sister is a very high-level horse rider. And she thinks she wants to ride horses, but it's hard because she's constantly comparing herself to her twin sister, and they're nothing alike as people. And so, yes, I agree with you. It's one of the great parts about it is something that she's pretty good at, she's passionate about, and if you can find a way to foster it, and say, hey, you know, you're pretty good at this. And people do like everybody likes her food. So,
That's awesome.
But, you know, she's a mess. So I know what I'm coming home to. But she'll wake up soon and start texting me about throwing the bird in. She wants to smoke the bird. I think the other members of the family are like, let's just be safe and bake the bird. And so we'll see who kind of wins out when I get home. Did you like to cook when you were a kid?
I did not. I like to eat. I know how to cook because my mom taught me, you know, like, which worked out to be good because I wound up getting divorced and being a bachelor. I do need to know how to cook a little something, but my mom taught me. She used to write me recipes when I went away to college. She wrote me recipes to make a couple of meals for myself. And, so she was really the cook but she taught me. So I know a little bit.
Yeah. My mom worked when I was a kid. And so she taught me how to cook so that when I came home as a latchkey kid, I could make myself something to eat. And, you know, and so that's one of the things that I've been big on teaching our kids is just the basics of how to cook. And my son's not great. He's the only one who doesn't cook. He'll make a microwave burrito and he'll make popcorn.
Right.
And that's about it. But my daughters do. They can, you know, the other one can cook some, and she makes some good little stuff, whatever. She likes salt a little bit too much. I mean, she made some broccoli last night. I'm like, man, where's the broccoli? Because I just taste the salt. But yes, I was the same. This is the Dan Patrick Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Your favorite side dish Thanksgiving is what?
I would say it would be sweet potatoes. Mm-hmm. Like just mashed sweet potatoes, delicious.
Now you want butter. Now do candy yams? You still do the sweet potatoes instead?
Yeah, I'll do both. I like both, but I could do like I'll do a sweet potato like a baked potato.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Put it in a microwave, smash it, and put some butter on top, and I'm good.
All right. I can't find any fault with that. I love the dressing. I love dressing is stuffing not stuffed right. Inside the turkey. I love the dressing. You put some. Turkey on its own is good. Put it with some dressing. Put it with some. I like the canned cranberry.
Do you really? I never like cranberry sauce.
I don't either. I don't like the sauce. I like the little. You know the little with it actually has like the can marks when you take it out.
Right.
You get right. I actually like that with the turkey and with the dressing.
Okay.
That's a personal.
That's a traditional meal, right there.
It is a traditional meal. I'm a.
Well, let me tell you who's been playing like a turkey. Can
okay.
we do that?
Yeah.
It's Tom Brady. Doug, let's just be honest.
You're calling the corner?
Yes, indeed. I'm not so sure that Tom Brady's going to finish out the second year in Tampa. I'm really not. If this thing continues to go south and either they get knocked out of the playoffs quickly or don't make the playoffs, which they should, they're 7-4, but it could come undone. The schedule is very favorable for them to win their games and make the playoffs, but... And the way Bruce Arians has handled him and called him out, even going back to that first game, Doug, against the Saints, you know, where he had some stuff to say about Tom Brady, even way back when, game one. And Tom Brady, if he continues to struggle, and he has, especially with the long ball and against the better teams and the better defenses, because ultimately when you go get and sign Tom Brady – you didn't sign Tom Brady to make the playoffs. You signed a 43-year-old quarterback with an unbelievable resume and 6 Super Bowls to try to win a Super Bowl, right? You feel like you have all the other pieces, and if we add this guy, add some water, and stir, that we're going to go to the Super Bowl. That is what the expectation was, not to make the playoffs for Tom Brady's last 2 years in the NFL. That's not really what it's about.
Well,
and right now, I don't see them there.
You don't think they're going to make the playoffs?
I don't see them as a real threat yet in the postseason.
Well, they're not
playing the way that they're playing.
There's a lot to it, okay? The first thing is, no, he did not play well. I think I have said previously, and I stand by it, it's a bad fit. You have a coach, like... Tom Brady is about precision. Tom Brady is about accuracy, everything underneath. And since Randy Moss left New England, who are the guys who have had the most success, right? Whether it's Welker, then Edelman, and Rob Gronkowski. Underneath stuff, finding mismatches for Gronk, you know, all within 10 to 15 yards of the line of scrimmage, precision routes, option routes on third down, and that's the opposite of what they're doing. And I think in many ways we had it all wrong, or many people had it all wrong in that, like, well, you know, and they're not wrong in that New England does needed threats outside the numbers, but he doesn't throw outside the numbers. He didn't have to. He just needed the space to do so. I mean, and you're right in his skills on some level have diminished, which is why New England turned to try and create a power running game, right? That's why they drafted a first-round running back. And loaded up that backfield because they knew they had to create time for him. And the best way to do so was running the football, not with having him stretch the defense down the field. That just wasn't who he is. And the reason he's had success with the Edelmans, the Welkers, the Rashay Caldwells, the Troy Browns, is those guys are intelligent wide receivers who know where they're supposed to be and are where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there and catch it when he throws it to them. And what he has now is more talent. But it's guys that are more talent in terms of more traditional, true wide receiver routes, not the crossing stuff, not the, you know, not the stuff within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. So, and then you take in how Bruce Arians has always coached. It's a bad fit. So we don't even truly have a sense of where Tom Brady is at this point in his career because he's trying to use somebody else's remote control to do what he's always done, and it ain't working. You've been blessed in your TV career, but I would guess in your radio and your print career, it's been different. But in that, who you worked for the most part, in terms of on a day-to-day, when you were at ESPN, right? When you were on First Take.
Yep.
And back when it was First and 10, and then it was First Take, right?
Exactly. That was on the cold pizza days. Sure. That's how far back I went.
But most of that group, from Skip, obviously Shannon, you know, Shannon is different, but most of that group, when you came over to Fox, those people who were in charge, they hired you to be you to do what you do, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, which is brilliant, which is why you've succeeded and your reputation has grown. I can tell you from when I switched from ESPN to CBS, my thing was always like, why did you guys hire me? And I guess I should have asked myself, why did I take this job? Because from my commentary to my style to all the different things I was doing, I'd always done radio, TV, games, studio, right? I'd always done that. They'd never had anybody who did all those things, had to juggle those schedules, was willing to work more, and had what I think were strong opinions. They struggled with the fact that I wasn't like anybody they had, and I didn't have somebody who was in management or in production day to day who'd ever worked with me before. So their language and their way of doing things was so different that neither were particularly happy or comfortable for a long time.
No, I get that. That makes total sense to me from that standpoint. And I see what you're saying with Brady and Arians and Tampa Bay, but you can't be Tom Brady thinking that you're going to work for Bill Belichick, who's done it for you for 20 years.
Right.
You know, like I think Brady miscalculated as well.
No question.
Am I right?
I'm sure he thought, look, this is the opposite of what I've been doing, right? What I've been doing is regimented. What I've been doing is cold weather.
Yep.
No fun. Go do your job, whatever. And Bruce Arians is like, look, man, whatever you want to do, we'll do. Right? Because that's what they always say when they're recruiting. Now, keep in mind, Brady wanted to play for the Chargers. Okay? He wanted to play for the Chargers because he had an offensive coordinator that was young, that he could really work with, that he could mold. Didn't have a head coach who was going to get into his business as far as play calling. They had, not only did they have really good wide receivers, they had a very good tight end. They had good stuff in terms of, you know, Keenan Allen is more of an underneath sort of guy than a take the top off guy. Like, I think he went, but it was too far for his wife and too far for his family. And she wanted to do Miami, and they weren't any good, right? And he didn't want to do Miami. He didn't want to play in the same division as the Patriots. Like, that just didn't make sense. So Tampa was somewhere in the middle. That was the reason he made the decision. Whereas the reason you should make a decision in life should not be about money, should not necessarily be about location. It should be about fit for what you do and how you do it. And it's a bad fit. Now, will he play his second year? I don't know. I think it all depends upon how it ends. The interesting thing about the second year is how many Patriots have left the Patriots, and the first year they were good, and the second year was an abject disaster.
Yep. Many. We've seen that with some guys who have moved on, and that could happen here with Brady, especially, I agree, Doug, if this ends badly this season, you know what I mean? And then what I mean is, say they make the playoffs and Brady's has an awful game and has two pick sixes or just doesn't play well and looks old and doesn't look good, then all the criticism will come down. We gave you everything you wanted, whatever, and you don't expect anybody to get better as they get older unless there's a blue pill involved. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but look, this is how it traditionally ends, though, with quarterbacks. This is how it ends. I mean, remember the playoff game which led to Dan Marino retiring where, you know, they just got humiliated by the Jacksonville Jaguars, right? I mean, even Peyton Manning, they won the Super Bowl, but he was awful.
He was awful that game.
Couldn't throw a football. You know, John Elway wasn't great at the end. I know he helicoptered in the end zone, but they won because Terrell Davis, the offensive line, they had a great defense. They ran the football.
Brett Favre ended his career with an interception, right?
And then he came back the next year.
Did he come back? Okay.
Yes. That was when they got on the plane and got him off the tractor, brought him back. He had that terrible Nike hat. It was like his favorite hat. And here's how bad it was in Minnesota. He got hurt. The streak ended, and the Metrodome actually, the roof collapsed. Right?
That's
right.
I do
remember symbolic of the end of his career. So this is actually very normal for how it ends, even though he looks better. He looks younger. His teeth, his hair, his skin looks amazing. Right? The truth is, he's 43 years old, and this is usually how it ends.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Christina Pink is going to be on the sideline of Fox's call of the Cowboys and the Washington football team. There's a Thanksgiving tradition, right? We get the Lions and we get the Cowboys. Now we get Washington against the Cowboys, traditional rivalry. And Christina joins us now on the Dan Patrick Show. And Christina, it's interesting.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. What you're going to work, and then are you going to have a meal? Is there a crew meal? Like, how does it actually work?
Well, thankfully, being here in Dallas and working with Troy the last couple years we've been here, he has had us over at Casa de Aikman. So I'm very appreciative of that. So I think he'll have a little something for the crew working after the game.
Excellent. Okay, so what both of these teams, if you look at their records, if you look at the injuries, especially the Cowboys have suffered, both of these teams, you would think playing for draft position, but then you look at the division like, dude, both these teams could easily win this division. What's the mood around these teams heading into the Thanksgiving Day game?
I know it's pretty bizarre because I was talking to a couple of Washington players yesterday, and I'm like, look, I mean, realistically, you guys could end up winning the division or you could end up with a top five pick. Like, this is, and it's like, yep, 2020, that's the way it is. But we feel like there's an opportunity here and we have to take advantage. And, you know, the other thing is they're playing on a big stage. They haven't played in the prime time all year. They know everybody's watching and everyone kind of has that feel of like, this is the game we can show out. This is the game where we can tell people that we're kind of turning the tide. And obviously the mood is a little different with Dallas, with everything that happened this week. So I think it's kind of unique, the emotions that are going to be riding both teams coming into this game.
Christina, how has your job changed with COVID and dealing with players and being around? How does that work?
It's crazy. I mean, I know you introduced me as a sideline reporter. I haven't been on a sideline all season. So it's pretty crazy. I'm in the first row of every stadium is kind of designated as what we call the moat. And that is where I do all of my reporting in game from the first row of the stands. And during the week, it's really all calls. You know, a lot of my information, which was my favorite part, would be coming from game day, like talking to assistant coaches, talking to players, especially when you have stuff where guys are questionable or last minute injuries, being able to talk to people before the game. I've still been able to do that a little bit, you know, obviously socially distanced, talking to guys like when they're in near the tunnel or coaches at halftime. But for the most part, all of that legwork happens during the week via Zoom or conference calls or like me talking to guys individually all before the game. So it is a little different. Hopefully we get it back to normal one day. But for right now, we've kind of made it work. But I do miss the in-person interactions that you get from going to practices and talking to guys before the game on the field.
Yeah, no, those meetings and being around the field, that's where you learn about those teams. They tell you about other teams and about other everything else going on in the league. I only did it once. I can't imagine doing an entire season. But it is mind-blowing on all the different information that you're able to and people. And you've been doing it long enough. You know everybody in the league. Christina Pink joining us. You will see her and hear her voice as part of Fox's coverage of the Washington football team taking on the Dallas Cowboys. There is a great story, right? I mean, Alex Smith playing football is a pretty remarkable story that I'm sure will be told several times over today. But what is the feeling around Washington in terms of his level of effectiveness?
I will tell you that, by the way, I honestly think that more people are concerned about Alex Smith than Alex Smith is about himself. because, you know, you watch him, you see what he's gone through the last 2 years, and he's taking hits out there, he's getting sacked, and, you know, talking to him, he's like, I feel comfortable out there. I feel fine. I'm not thinking about it. But people do feel like, especially with talking with Ron Rivera, that he'll get better as the season's gone on. I was actually just looking at some of Washington's numbers in the first 6 weeks compared to now, the last few weeks of the season. Completely different team offensively, and they do feel like he's getting a lot sharper as the weeks go on. He's a lot comfortable. They can open up the offense more. And obviously he's playing for Scott Turner. He played for Norv before, so there is some familiarity. And he's getting more comfortable as the season's going on. But they do feel like he's effective. He's helping a really, really young receiver core as well.
How about on the Dallas side? Mike McCarthy's now a cut-rate Gallagher with smashing watermelons. It was a terrible start for him. And, I mean, it's 3-7, but it was the hinges were coming undone early on down there in Dallas for him. Where's Mike McCarthy at in his head and his hold on that football team?
I think he feels pretty good from our conversations with him yesterday. I do think that people don't talk enough, which obviously no one's making excuses for all the injuries they've had this year. But if you put it, they could probably, you know, have like an all-star team of guys that they've got in the training room right now. And when you lose Dak, that's pretty significant. I know Andy Dalton played pretty well last week, but I think they feel like in these last couple of games, especially obviously their defense hasn't played well this season, if they can come together on the defensive side of the ball, that'll be the big difference maker for them.
You know, it's interesting. They got rid of, you know, they got rid of some guys mid-season. Like, did that change the level of buy-in in that locker room?
Well, I can tell you that I think yes, but I also think it's very notable that other teams have pointed that out. You know, talking to some of the Washington guys, they said this is a very different team. We all saw what happened in the first game, but all the moves they made defensively, like this is a different team that we're going to be facing on Thanksgiving Day. So I do think not only obviously there's a buy-in, a change, you know, kind of like a different energy when you make those kinds of moves, but it's notable that other teams have brought that up as well.
How about Ezekiel Elliott? And when the Cowboys a couple of years ago were really good, it was about him running first and Dak throwing second, and then somehow it got switched around and Dak started throwing more and Ezekiel started running less or not as much or not as effective, I guess, maybe. As Ezekiel, I think he had 100 yards his last game. How important is he to get back to being able to be a productive runner? And will that help the Cowboys win?
Well, it's huge, of course. And he's coming off of a good game. I also know he's been really good traditionally playing on Thanksgiving. He's averaged 133 scrimmage yards, so it could be the breakout day for him. And I think that will go a long way towards what Dallas wants to do here, kind of making a push towards the end of the season. But it's kind of on his legs. There's been a little bit of a shift over the years, but I think especially with the injury to Dak and their offense trying to find a groove, it does need to lean a bit more on Zeke, and we might see that here in the last few weeks of the season.
Now part of what we should discuss, and I know you're going to have to bring it up today, there's this tragedy where Marcus Paul, who looked like the picture of health, 54 years old. He had some sort of medical emergency and he died at 54. They had to, you know, they canceled practice one day and the next day they did everything kind of virtually. I would have to think that that's got to be really hard to go to work. I mean, if you've been around a college or professional football team, the strength coach is the guy. That's the connective tissue between the position coaches, the coordinators, and the players. Because they're totally bought into just making the players right, making the players better. How are these guys dealing with such a tragic event?
It's awful. It's really awful. And I can't imagine what they're going through right now to have to get back to the facility yesterday and then have to play a game. And, you know, like it's you guys are really great at compartmentalizing in this league, but this is fresh. You know, we talked to yesterday when we were talking to Coach McCarthy, this was even prior to the announcement of the passing yesterday. So this is just coming in like 24 hours before they have to a game significantly, a division game. And so it's tough. It's really difficult for them. You're going to have guys with a lot of emotion playing through this. And it's very stoic from everything I've heard just around the facility. You know, it's been tough, you know, and I don't know if there's any other way to say it than it's just, it's been difficult. It's been really tough on them.
Christina, were there other players around when this happened? Or was he in his office and somebody found him? Like, it's not for morbid details, but I can only imagine that if certain players were around him and saw it happen, it becomes, you know, even harder to come back from quickly.
I'm not sure, Sydney. Yeah, I'm not sure specifically who was there. I know it was in the facility on, what was that? That would have been Tuesday morning. And that's why they, you know, they closed the facility. And he had, you know, as they described, a medical emergency. The training staff looked at him and then he went to the hospital. But, you know, it's going to be a really difficult, not just a difficult day, a difficult week. Obviously, it's going to affect the Cowboys organization, their players, their staff, but even Ron Rivera brought up this week that he played with him in Chicago. So everybody's thinking about him. Yeah. And so it is, it's really, really tough.
Yeah, he was a great player back at 2-time All-American at Syracuse, of course, played 5 seasons in the National Football League and was with the Giants organization for, I think, 11 years now.
He's been with a lot of winning. He's done a lot of winning, right? He was with the Patriots and the Giants, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just kind of a remarkable personal story. Well, listen, Christina, I hate to end it on a bad note, but we do appreciate you joining
us. Happy Thanksgiving.
Wish you a happy
too.
Thanksgiving. Crush it today as you have been all season long, and thanks for being our guest.
Oh, thank you so much, guys. Wishing you a great Thanksgiving to all you guys. And, you know, hopefully you enjoy it out there in California.
Thank you. That's Christina Pink.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.